The Ghost Goal Podcast.
Chelsea went on the road and upset the champions, Manchester City, walking away from the Etihad with a 1-1 draw against all odds, while Liverpool and Arsenal continued their great runs of form, winning by 4-1 and 5-0 scorelines respectively. All this is leading up to a Carabao Cup final coming up next weekend that we're only going to be talking about on this episode for a little bit just because Chelsea are involved. But that will see Chelsea face another excellent team in Liverpool at Wembley on Sunday. I'm Alex, here with Javier. Welcome to the Ghost Goal Podcast, episode 442.
Wait, Alex, I have to correct you there really quick. You said another excellent team. It's just featuring one excellent team. That'll be Liverpool and then
yeah, that
Chelsea.
Was within the context of Chelsea facing an excellent team in Manchester City last weekend and then facing another excellent team.
Fair
in
enough. I thought you were trying to like refer to Chelsea as another excellent team in that final.
At no point in the last 2 years have I referred to Chelsea as an excellent team. I'm not going to start now.
I was just setting that straight for the listeners.
Yeah, maybe I didn't deliver that well enough. I'm happy I was able to clarify. That, of course, is the voice of Javier, a very happy Arsenal fan that, of course, we will get to their drubbing of Burnley in a little bit here. But we got to start at the Etihad, as I just mentioned. Chelsea, though we are not an excellent team, put on an excellent performance on Saturday at the Etihad, getting a second draw of the season against Manchester City.
I was 1-1. Such a big fan again, Alec. I've never been cheering so much for Chelsea in a season. I think I've been loving Chelsea this season. This was a great performance. I think defensively, you guys were really solid. I think I texted you before the game, and I was like, I like your back line. I've never at any point during this entire season texted you before a Chelsea game and said, I think this is a good back line. And I think the balance is right. I think you commented to me, Reece James instead of Malagusto. But I actually think Malagusto might have the edge a little bit in terms of like fitness and defensively.
Well, yeah, edge in fitness.
No, he can like get up and down the wing and defend more than Reece James. I mean, Reece James can bomb down the wing and attack better. But
Reece James is just as good of a 1v1 defender. He's better technically. I don't want to start this out like talking about against Malagusto.
No, yeah, I just thought Malagusto was great. I just thought he was really, really good in this game. He's not consistent yet. Yeah, I was about to say he needs time.
He shut down Doku completely.
Great.
But
yeah.
if you don't remember, Reece James shut down Doku in the first game, the 4-4. Now the rest of
shut down.
Team performed.
I mean, scored four goals.
Doku himself did nothing in that game and had to be subbed off. I was just about to say that obviously the rest of City's team did very well against Chelsea because I think we had Levi Colwill playing at left back in that game, and he's played at left back for most of the season.
I really liked him at left center back. That was
great.
But
now slotting him back into left center back where he played next to Lewis Dunk, I would say a pretty similar center back to Axel Disasi, who was playing at center back for Chelsea.
And he's also played
Saturday.
Right back a few times for you guys. Like he was finally, kind of playing his right position.
Who would have thought? You put those two players in their natural, actual center back positions, they're able to perform. Disasi, I haven't seen a better performance.
That was definitely
from him
his best performance in
a Chelsea
shirt. For sure.
He's giving me shades of like Rudiger with that performance specifically. Now, whether he can keep that up, and this is a question for the whole team going into the cup final I mentioned this weekend, whether the team can keep this up and develop the consistency that's necessary for the team as a whole to progress, that's another question. I'm still not convinced of that. I'll need to see it to believe it, because so far, when Chelsea have had these good performances against good teams, we've mentioned a few times recently that during that last tough run against similar opposition in October and November when we played City and Arsenal and Tottenham and didn't lose any of those games, we would follow that up by like losing at home to Brentford or losing away at Everton like right after that run of games. So that's where I have to wait and see.
As much as I shot on Caicedo for his performances in the last couple of weeks, I thought he was back to playing really well in this game. I thought him and Enzo both had decent games, but I thought Gallagher was...
Enzo was everywhere.
Enzo and Gallagher were everywhere,
Everywhere.
I mean, I thought Gallagher, he had one play where he slipped the ball through to Nkunku, who had just come on, And he was 1v1 with Ederson to make it 2-0. And I think you guys would have won the game if you'd scored that. I mean, you guys had a couple of chances too. But I think talking from a Chelsea point of view, it's great to build on from this draw. But I think we have to talk about it from a City point of view, because I'd be a little bit worried if I was a City fan, Alex. You know, I don't necessarily think
really?
That. Okay, I mean, yeah, a little bit, because this, you know, they had their full team here. You know, they were able to bring Bernardo Silva off the bench. They didn't have to start him. They had Doku.
Do you think they were bad?
I mean, I think it's worrying that Haaland missed 3 or 4 sitters. I thought
See,
that
it doesn't
I
worry
thought that,
me at all.
No,
sometimes
and,
you just have games like
no,
that as
but,
a striker.
No, but and after like the 70th minute, it kind of looked like they ran out of ideas and they just started spamming crosses into the box. And it's like Desas.
They all looked pretty like well thought out, well placed balls to me. And honestly, if I was a City fan, I would just be thinking like, Haaland just had one of those games where he had 3 or 4 very good chances, couldn't manage to finish any of them. And frankly, last week, the Everton game that they had at home, for 60, 70 minutes, it was looking like one of those games for Haaland there too. And then he scored a brace, and then you forget about it all, and Haaland's still amazing. Now, in this game, they were facing a Chelsea team that was producing one of the best performances we've had all season, specifically one of the best defensive performances we've had all season. And still, even then, he had 2 point-blank headers that he missed, towering over Colwill for the first one, and then getting free to get on the end of a De Bruyne cross from the left side in the second half. And then he had, I think, 1 or 2 others that fell to him on his left foot that just arrived like a little bit too quickly for him to set himself and react appropriately. I think, like, if we played them 10 times, 9 of those times, Haaland scores a goal at least, probably a brace. This was the 10th time where he missed all 4 chances. So I wouldn't be worried at all if I was a City fan. If they continue operating like they did against Chelsea that day, against, you know, the
no,
best, frankly,
but
that
I'm,
we really
but
had.
But Alex, I'm worried about like how open
gonna,
they were defensively,
the
especially in the first half. They were so open defensively, and this isn't the first time we've seen it this season. Chelsea could have scored 3 goals on them in the first half. And they could have been down 2 or 3-0. I mean, Guardiola was furious. Like, this is very unlike City, especially coming into the run-in, to have a result like this. They're usually just blazing wins at this point in the season. I'm saying games like this don't usually happen for City like this late in the season. It's not a great look, like when you're playing Copenhagen
in the
midweek.
They've had like
when you're
losses
playing,
at home
when
to
you're playing,
Tottenham. And
yeah, but you're playing Copenhagen in the midweek and then you're dropping points to Chelsea, like, it's just, it's not like they didn't have the toughest game. They're going to have a lot harder games, and they have a really hard run coming up. So I'm not saying City are, but it does look like they can drop points. They're not invincible. Offensively, yeah, they're going to be blasting teams, scoring 3 or 4 goals. But you can definitely see teams getting ahead 1 or 2 goals and maybe frustrating City and defending and being able to win games 2-1 or drawing 2-2 and City dropping points that way.
Let me meet you halfway. If they drop points, like with a draw or something, to Brentford tomorrow on Tuesday, that they're going to be playing Brentford in a makeup from when they were away at the Club World Cup, if they drop points there, yes, they should be concerned. But this game, Chelsea, that was the best performance defensively, like I said, specifically, that I've seen from Chelsea this season. And like, City still came away with a point. Yes, they trailed for most of it. That's probably what makes people a little concerned, that it wasn't, you know, Chelsea coming back and nicking a draw right at the end. Like, City had to really grind it out to get that equalizer, and then, you know, had a couple of like half chances afterwards to get the winner. I think they're okay. They really are okay. They just came up against a Chelsea team that just so happened to have Cole Palmer going back to his former club and playing excellently, Raheem Sterling going back to his former club, scoring a goal. And before anyone sucks him off too much, that was his first league goal since November.
Well, I was about to say, since that November goal, which was against Manchester City, actually, City are now, you know, City are about to go on this reverse run of games that they went on, and they'd had a really, really bad run in, if you can remember, in November and December, where, you know, they drew 4-4 with Chelsea, 1-1 with Liverpool, 3-3 with Tottenham, lost to Aston Villa, you know, barely beat Luton 2-1, drew with Crystal Palace 2-2, and then they've racked off a few wins, but it's not like they've been blowing teams away. That's why I'm worried, because, like, not worried, I mean, I'm happy that it looks like this, but, like, they, you know, they beat Sheffield 2-0, they barely beat Newcastle 3-2, you know, they beat Burnley 3-1. They're not like annihilating these teams. They're conceding goals to Burnley and Brentford. And it's just, it doesn't feel like this City team is like fully like running as it usually is at this point in the season.
I mean, 3 points is 3 points. Yeah. Yes, you probably feel better about it when dropping it's a 5-0 away at
Burnley.
They
keep dropping points.
Whether they beat a team like 2-1 or 1-0, or if it's 5-0 or 6-0 like Arsenal's pulling off.
Or like Liverpool's
like
pulling off.
I think Liverpool's doing it as well. That kind of form, you know? Once the games really, really start to matter.
Yeah.
So I'm not too worried about them yet. The only time I will start to, you know, doubt City is once those games against Liverpool and against Arsenal happen, and if they don't get positive results in those, if they don't control their own destiny anymore, then you have to start like worrying a little bit, because City for years now have just, you know, they know what they have to do to win the title, and it's win X number of games over this period of time. They do it, they're pretty methodical about it, and no one's really been able to stop them. But some other team like Arsenal or Liverpool can sort of wrestle that away from them and decide their own destiny. Then,
well, I was about to say Liverpool now are in their own destiny. Even if City win here, they're going to be a point off Liverpool. So,
well, they don't.
It's
because
already
City
starting
can beat Liverpool
to,
in the second game. And
yeah,
go
that's
ahead
fair.
Of them if,
that's fair.
So that's what I'm talking about. Like if City didn't have the second Liverpool game to control their own destiny, and Liverpool had this lead on them, then you start thinking maybe someone can finally like pull it, like wrestle it away from them. But I digress. All right, what do we want to talk about next? I don't know why I just asked that question. It's obviously Arsenal. This is a podcast hosted by a Chelsea and an Arsenal fan. And Arsenal had, for the first time in their club's history, a second win by 5 goals or more in away matches in a row. Like I said, they beat Burnley 5-0 on Saturday. It wasn't really ever a contest. You guys went up 1-0 within 4 minutes and never really looked back. Give us your quick new thoughts on Arsenal. Obviously, don't go talking about the same stuff from last week. What did you see that was new to you in this game?
Yeah, so I think just I want to talk about how Arsenal's evolved a little bit tactically in terms of what we've been doing this season and just position-wise how some players have shifted. So at times so far this season when Kai Havertz has played in the team, it's either been as a false nine. You know, he starts the game at false nine but pretty much plays there. It's been only a couple times that he's played there. And then for the most part, it's been at that left, like left center mid, kind of attacking mid, but, you know, still defensive, but getting into the box a lot. And that's been his role. He hasn't been great at it. You know, he's missed, fluffed a bunch of chances. You know, creatively, he hasn't been, I think, the best. But recently, Trossard's been starting in the team, and he's been starting at the false nine position. Havertz has been playing behind him, but the two have been interchanging constantly during the game. I mean, if you watch the two, Trossard is coming into midfield and Havertz is pushing up and receiving a long ball, playing a ball down to Trossard and them, and they're playing give and goes. Their understanding right now is something we just, it hasn't been existent in the team at all this season. So it's a connection that has kind of come out of nowhere, of both of them being able to interchangeably play the false nine and drop into midfield. And when one is pushing up the pitch, the other one stays back. You know, in that Burnley game, I think Kai Havertz won 12 tackles, something like that. I mean, he was, you know, all over the pitch in terms of defensive contributions and interceptions and just all around work rate. I mean, he's doing that from, you know, an offensive position a lot when we have the ball, and it's working. He was actually part of all 5 goals. When you go back and watch the Arsenal highlights, he either had the ball, you know, he had 2 assists, or I think he had a goal and 2 assists, and he had, you know, the goal or the pass before the assist. You know, he was like part of all of the attacks basically for all of our goals. And he's becoming him and Trossard as well. Trossard now, I think he has 5 goals in his last 8 starts for us. You know, I think he has really good numbers off the bench too, but you know, he's starting to get a consistent run of games. And even with the absence of Gabriel Jesus, we've scored 21 goals in our last 4 games, Alex. So this like change in tactics has teams, you know, they don't know what to do. They don't know to follow Trossard into midfield when he has the ball. If they should go with Havertz when he's making his runs through midfield. You know, Havertz is so good at bringing the ball down and playing down to Saka, Odegaard, or Trossard now. So just it's brought a new dimension to the team. And I'm curious to see, you know, who's going to be the first team to really be able to stop it, because it had there hasn't been an answer to it yet.
Yeah, I mean, we'll know more once you see. I mean, obviously that
Liverpool couldn't stop it.
Was played against Liverpool,
yeah,
a very injured Liverpool team, but you know, still against Liverpool, and then it's completely shredded. A West Ham team that's on a poor run of form, and a Burnley team that's the only reason they're not the worst team in the Premier League right now is because Sheffield United exists, and they're awful, even more so. But yeah, well, you'll see how it does against Newcastle, and then when this this pestering Chelsea team comes to the Emirates, those will probably be better tests than West Ham and Burnley. But yeah, that was the idea I was thinking of when you guys first signed Kai. I didn't think he'd be a good option as a center midfielder. I was basically trying to think, like, he's the sort of Arsenal's version of Roberto Firmino, while Martinelli and Saka are, you know, the more direct wing options like Mane and Salah. So we'll see. It looks good so far, though. I'll definitely give Arsenal credit, at least so far. All right, we got a hit on this Tottenham-Wolves game. Wolves went to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, went back down to London after shellacking Chelsea a few weeks ago 4-2, and beat Spurs 2-1. Do you get a chance to watch this game, or were you just fully locked in on Arsenal's beatdown of Burnley? Because they were at the same time.
Yeah, no, I didn't really get to watch this game. I mean, I saw the highlights afterward. I saw João Gomes got, you know, his first goal off a header, which should never happen. He was the smallest player, you know, in that set piece. He's like 5'6" or something, but great, great header. And then Tottenham, you know, kind of came roaring back there. You thought they were going to push on to get the winner, but man, Wolves are pesky, you know. And Pedro Neto, what a run he made. He's been doing that all season, you know, laying it to Gomes on a plate, and just that was a beautiful finish, just smashing.
That counterattack, it gave me like Vietnam-esque like PTSD flashbacks from the Chelsea game. Like, they were doing the same thing over and over again to us when they beat us 4-2, and the counterattack for Neto to set up Gomes for the winner
the same. Sarabia was the one who put in the corner, so he got the assist to João Gomes. But when they have Cunha, you know, Huang
is out.
I know,
was out.
I know, but when they have Cunha, I know, when they have Cunha, Huang, and Pedro Neto front three, I mean, the speed is going to be, yeah.
I mean, imagine if
terrifying.
Gary O'Neill gets away from this. I'm not saying he should do this, but if he happens to have the idea to maybe get away from this three at the back / five at the back, go with four at the back, and then try to play all four of those players together, Sarabia, Neto, Huang, and Cunha, maybe against like the teams in mid-table and below, he can try that to be even more like offensive. That's a scary thought, because they're all very technically gifted and direct players that so far have worked really well.
I was
together.
Telling you about Tottenham, though, Alex. I haven't been convinced by them, and then another slip up.
I got to give them a bit of an excuse, because the main thing I was talking about in the recap of that Chelsea loss to Wolves was how Wolves just fleeced us on the wings. They identified the lack of pace and the lack of cover that we had on the wings for, you know, little 1-2s to slip their really fast wing players, and you know, even Cunha, like, his pace to drift out wide as well was an option. And Spurs, it looked like they did the same thing, because I had that on the second screen while I was watching the Arsenal-Burnley game. And you saw right from the beginning when you saw Emerson Royale and Ben Davies playing right and left back. No Pedro Porro out with an injury, and no Udogie. You knew there was going to be a little bit of an issue. You knew that Tottenham couldn't be the same sort of swashbuckling like Spurs team that Postecoglou's made them, because they're so reliant on those fullbacks to, you know, not just like get forward down the wings, but like drift into midfield and sort of like lump up the midfield and make it a little bit tougher to break through with those counterattacks. And without the same quality of player in those positions, Wolves were able to once again just absolutely fleece them down the wings and create all sorts of like overloads on each wing to take advantage of. Like you said, Tottenham, you know, they were in the game. They came back like within 30 seconds of the second half starting and scored. And you thought to yourself, all right, yeah, maybe Tottenham are going to do what they've done at home so many times, go behind and then get it together and win it. But once you saw Wolves like maintain that same sort of intensity in their press and Neto just becoming a one-man counterattack to set up the winner, you did have the thought like, okay, Tottenham are in a bit of trouble here. And if they get those fullbacks like Porro and Odogi back, they should be fine. But it does give you thoughts like through to next season. If they qualify for Champions League and, you know, have more games to play, are they going to be able to keep this sort of like style of play up when, you know, there's more games happening, more chances for like impact players like that to go down injured? They're going to have to get kind of creative in the transfer window to bring in some suitable backups, because right now Royale and Ben Davies are not it. Like Davies has passed it, and Royale I don't think we ever really had it. So I will agree with you from the standpoint that it's definitely a little concerning that the front four of Kulusevski, Maddison, Son, and Richarlison couldn't create more than what they did. Yes, Kulusevski got his first goal for a little bit, but other than that, we didn't see as intense of a Tottenham attack as we're accustomed to seeing at home. So, yeah, I'll agree with you there. There should be a little concern on the attacking front that Maddison and Son specifically weren't able to have much success against this Wolves team. I think we got to mention this Brentford 1, Liverpool 4 match that kicked off the weekend on Saturday morning, just because of the quality of goals that were scored in it. Did you wake up for this one?
Yeah, I mean, I saw part of this. I turned it off after the second Liverpool goal. But that Nunez chip was ridiculous.
It was incredible.
Yeah, that was ridiculous.
Did that give you flashbacks to watching me play center forward for us in clubs?
In pro clubs, yeah. No, I was like, oh wow, that was an unreal finish. It looked like a video game finish. So that was
the McAllister one impressed me more, just because of the totality of the goal with Salah's pass after he came on for Jota after he got injured. The first touch from McAllister to sort of like take it like through the defender's legs and then just, you know, stab it into. To score it, it was just a beautiful goal. I mean, both were beautiful, but something about both Salah's pass and the first touch and the finish all combined into one for that second one was just so satisfying to watch. But it has to be mentioned that these injuries that Liverpool sustained in that game, Nunez,
yeah,
despite scoring that goal,
Nunez,
went down injured.
Jones,
Jota as well. Jota's probably going to be out for the season. They're saying.
Yeah,
they're saying
Jones,
he's probably not going to be back.
Jones is out. I mean, the injuries are racking up, and they got games coming. So I don't know if Liverpool are going to be able to sustain it, dude. I mean, it's just, that's my feeling with them. I know that they're still flying well. And, oh, I've heard that Salah might have re-aggravated his injury as well. So let's see. Let's see if this, like, if they push Salah to play every single game and Nunez keeps, you know, coming in and out of the team. And, you know, every time he seems to be getting momentum, he gets hurt for 2 or 3 weeks. It's just, it might not be what, you know, Liverpool might not get as much as they want this season. But what I was going to say in terms of Alex, you know, you were talking about Tottenham maybe slowing down a little bit. We got to talk about Manchester United, because they won again at Luton. Not an easy place to win. They, you know, went up 2-0. Or no, it was they went up 1-0. Luton equalized.
No, they went up 2-0.
No, I think, right? Oh, yeah, they went up 2-0.
Hoyland scored in the
two
first
goals,
like,
yeah,
7
right.
minutes
and
twice.
Then, and then... Luton, you know, kind of looked like they could have come back into it. Onana made some big saves, and, you know, I would say that United aren't the finished product yet, but, you know, they're back in the race. I think they're 5 points off top four now. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can pretty confidently
say they're
back in the
Tottenham.
Race for top four.
Yeah, 3 points behind Tottenham, but 5 points behind Villa. There's still
room to grow, because even during this, what is it, 5 games they've won in a row since they drew Tottenham 2-2 back on January 14th. They've won all of them, obviously. But depending on which game you look at, a lot of them have been kind of chaotic. They don't have control in a lot of these games. And I think the one that typifies that was the 4-3 win at Wolves, where, you know, they were up two goals for a good chunk of the match, gave up the lead, and then Kobbie Mainoo bails them out with one of the goals of the season to sort of announce himself as, you know, a player to be reckoned with in the Premier League. And this Luton game had a lot of the same vibes. It was chaotic. Like, Luton were able to slice through them and attack, directly get at them on the counterattack.
Yeah, you were just
every
saying, Alex, a win's
game,
a win.
Like that.
And they just, they're on their best run of the season. Four straight wins. They haven't had a run like this. You know, people were calling
for... top four doing that.
Yeah.
I don't think you can win the league doing that.
No.
And I'm not saying that they will, but you...
Yeah, and they play Fulham next. I mean, they could win then, you know, theoretically, they don't have that many super hard fixtures left. I think they're...
Well, they have away Manchester City in the league after Fulham. So... we'll see how, you know, Kobbie Mainoo and, you know, and company and Hoyland, how they stack up against, you know, the...
Yeah, it's
going to
be an exciting game, though. I'm glad that United are on the form they are, and they're going to reach Manchester City playing the way they are right now. But, yeah, I think for United, they got to just keep building on this and try to stay injury-free and try to keep integrating more players in the team and figure out who needs to be there this summer. But, you know, if they can get top four, that'd be massive because it didn't look like they could get anywhere close to that. But it looks like, you know, Villa and Tottenham are both, you know, choking a little bit right now.
Though Villa did, you know, sort of right the ship with the 2-1 win at Fulham this past week. So I wouldn't say they're completely out of it just yet. But one more game I did want to recap, and less so for the game itself and more so for the news that accompanies it, is Everton Crystal Palace. That game was... earlier today on Monday, a relegation six-pointer of sorts. You know, Palace aren't in the relegation zone, but with the form they've had recently, they've started to look over their shoulders a bit more. And it was announced before the game, just before the game kicked off, maybe an hour or two before, that Roy Hodgson would be stepping down as Crystal Palace manager, and that Oliver Glasner, the former Frankfurt and Wolfsburg manager, who won the Europa League with Frankfurt 2 years ago, he's going to be taking over. Didn't take over today because, like I said, it was just announced right before the game. But for the rest of the season, he'll be at the helm at Palace. But, you know, Roy Hodgson, I think this is kind of a nice way to fire him. You know, the form had gone off a cliff. And I think, frankly, the Chelsea result, the way Palace capitulated in the second half against Chelsea after, you know, frustrating us for much of the first half and going ahead and then... end up losing 3-1. That was kind of like
there's been a lot of really unfortunate results for Roy. A lot of games where he's been up and then his team's kind of capitulated and his players might have let him down a little bit. But, you know, he's a class act and he came in and you know, righted the ship for Crystal Palace last season when they needed it. And I think you're right. I mean, I think he tried to step away already and he just came back and did them a favor coming back. So it's a nice way to, you know, let like a Crystal Palace legend, you know, step back down and not, you know, be any disrespect to him at all.
Well,
and, you know, you didn't want the fans to get
nice
mad
way
at him, you know,
it's a nice way to let him go because I only just realized this yesterday that on Thursday morning, he supposedly collapsed and needed medical treatment at Crystal Palace's training, had to go to the hospital. So he's obviously of an age where that's more likely to happen, especially with as stressful of a job as being a Premier League manager is. But yeah, it's that combined with the poor form, it feels like the right time. Also, I have to say, Palace are kind of punching above their weight, getting a manager like Oliver Glasner to come in. Now, you know, Premier League is obviously, it's a big draw for plenty of managers around the world. You're in probably the top 1% of best managers in the world if you're managing a Premier League club. But you'd think Oliver Glasner would have like a few more options in Germany higher up the table that were like Frankfurt, who were, you know, in the Champions League at one point after winning the Europa League. And to take the Palace job on,
right,
I think he's a manager.
No, nobody,
he's a
yeah,
manager
but nobody
could,
knows who Oliver Glasner is playing with, like
yeah,
being
no,
the Frankfurt
not,
or Wolfsburg manager.
He's not Xabi Alonso, you know, he's not the sexy
that's
young
what I was gonna say.
New thing.
I mean, I think himself coming to the Premier League itself is a huge step up already, even just going from any team in the Bundesliga. So I don't think he's punching above his weight or Palace. I think they're it's a good appointment.
I think Palace are punching above their
I
weight
don't
getting
think they
him.
Are.
All right. I think he could do something with Palace. I think it could be a successful thing. I still don't... That wouldn't change my mind that Palace are punching above their weight getting him. So, good for them. They clearly need it because all the talent that they have, all those young players, they're not always available. So you need a manager who can figure out things on the fly to get results in the short term.
Would you take Oliver Glasner at Chelsea, Alex?
No, I would not take Oliver Glasnow.
All right, then they're not punching above their weight because, I mean, Crystal Palace
Chelsea
are like
are also,
you're both mid-table teams. No, you're both mid-table teams.
We've won the Champions League twice. We've won the league five times in this century, you know?
You know, you don't have to get so salty and talk about the past like that.
No, I'm just stating facts. We're talking about
current teams.
A club that
we've
beaten 14 times in a row in the league and, you know. It's just not true, you know? I have to have some shred of dignity left for myself, Javier. Chelsea,
you're like, I will not stand for Palace. Like,
all right, well, that brings us... Actually, it's a really good segue because I think for two early like match previews for this weekend, we have to preview this Chelsea-Liverpool game because it is a cup final. It's obviously not the most prestigious cup final. But a win here for Chelsea would frankly like make our season. We're not doing anything in the league.
I'm rooting for you, man. I want the Liverpool depression of losing a final. I want the disappointment for Klopp. I want Klopp to have never won this competition.
Well, that's just not going to happen because he already won it when he beat us in this final 2 years ago. You don't remember 2 years ago when Tuchel was coach? They beat us on penalties in the Carabao Cup final and the FA Cup final in the same season. It was nil-nil in both games.
I thought he hadn't won that. Okay, then...
No, he's won both of them.
So he's won everything with Liverpool, then.
Everything except the Europa League, which he could win this season.
Oh, nice.
Both teams have a lot of injuries. You were saying to me earlier today that with Liverpool's injuries, Chelsea should 100% like expect
to beat
Liverpool.
You should expect to beat Liverpool.
I'm going to have to see what that Salah rumor about his injury being re-aggravated is.
This team is like limping.
Playing, like
you're
going to
see like Kwanzaa and like.
Okay.
I mean,
they have Konate and Van Dijk available.
Okay. Like you should be able to beat this team when they have their third and fourth team.
You underestimate our ability to create.
This is your season.
Than anyone else in the league and miss all of them. I've seen us do it too many times. Not
you should
just
have
this
confidence
season.
From the Chelsea game, Alex, or from the City game against you. You know, I think the players will be confident. I don't know how much, you know, an expenditure of energy that was, but you guys got a full week of rest. Liverpool have to play in the midweek. You don't play in the midweek.
True.
You have no excuse for this game. I really think Chelsea should.
That's
win
what
this
worries
final.
Me.
I really
That's
think Chelsea should
the
be
most.
Winning this final. And Liverpool.
All right,
are like,
how much are Chelsea winning this final
they're,
by?
I,
tell me.
I think it's going to be like 1-1 in regular time. Chelsea win 2-1 in extra time.
I think we lose on penalties again. I think it's like 1-1 regular time, like you said, it goes to penalties.
Allison's injured.
On penalties.
It's going to be Kelleher.
He is.
You think
Kelleher,
Kelleher
is
will beat
specialist.
Petrovic in penalties?
He beat Kepa in penalties. He scored a penalty and saved Kepa's penalty in the last Carabao Cup final we played against them 2 years ago. So yes. Absolutely. It's happened before. Why wouldn't it happen again against an objectively worse Chelsea team? So
again, they don't have Kelleher. They don't have Trent.
They do have Kelleher.
Sorry,
they don't have
Allison. They don't have Trent.
They have Connor Bradley, who just scored
right, but like,
against
this
us
team
like a
is
week
like,
or two ago.
It's full of their
Still
academy players
excellent.
And their second choice players. And Darwin's not fully fit or not probably not going to. He's not going to play. No Darwin. Salah's going to be like 50% at best. I mean, it's not looking good for them.
I'm sure they'll piece together some group of players that will play well. They've got a better manager than us in Klopp.
Yeah,
they're
but you still have
to
deal with like Gakpo,
to win one last trophy
Diaz.
For Klopp before he goes.
Still have to probably it's Gakpo, Diaz, Salah front three.
Right, like, come on, that's very good. That's not a bad front three. Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm standing by it. We're going to lose on penalties.
McAllister, Elliott, and Endo in midfield. And then...
Or Gravenberg.
Yeah, or Gravenberg.
He
and
played
then,
well against Brentford.
And then Virgil, Konate, Bradley. Tsimikas is hurt.
Robertson,
yeah. All right, that's still pretty good.
That's a good team, yeah. I'm not counting Liverpool out at all, and neither should you. All right, other games to look forward to this weekend... Bournemouth Manchester City kind of caught my eye. You know, Manchester City do have this the Brentford game tomorrow that you will likely have already taken place by the time all of you were listening to this.
We owe Newcastle, Alex. We paid back West Ham for what they did to us, but that Arsenal Newcastle game on Saturday.
So you're just completely glossing over Bournemouth Manchester City.
I expect a thrashing. No, I expect City beat them 6-1 in the reverse fixture. So I kind of
but
expect.
That was at home, and that was before Iraola figured out, you know, this buzzing system that's
yeah, but like Liverpool, you know, just Liverpool just got a draw. Liverpool just beat them 3-0 there. I kind of think that City will have a pretty easy time there. I think Bournemouth haven't really shown up against the bigger teams this season. They've been really good against teams below them and like really put them to the sword, but I think the teams above them have really shown their class at kind of just outplaying Bournemouth at their own game. So
they should have beaten Newcastle this past weekend. They were up 2-1 and conceded right at the end, but they were all over Newcastle last weekend at St. James's Park, which is even more impressive. All right, well, if we don't have any other games to, you know, take a little look ahead to, then I say we fire up the oven, prepare the cutlery, get the sous chefs at the ready. I don't know, you're the one who used to working like at a restaurant. You tell me what the terminology is, because it's time for Javier's Fantasy Kitchen.
No, Alex, yeah, it was pretty good effort, Alex. But yeah, I've got we've got some changes to the Fantasy Kitchen coming in the works. Maybe not this week. But you know, there might be some courses that we bring to you guys soon. But for now, there's just a few picks that I have. I do want to talk about how there's going to be a blank game week after this. So because of that Carabao Cup final, Liverpool and Chelsea aren't playing this weekend. So like your Chelsea players aren't going to play, your Liverpool players. Make sure you set your fantasy lineup. Make sure you take your, you know, if you have a
and like, the teams that they're supposed to play against. So we were supposed to play Tottenham this week, so no Tottenham players are playing. I don't know who Liverpool were supposed to play, but whoever they were supposed to play, they're not playing either, because those games are going to be postponed to probably a midweek double game week later in the season.
But yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, gonna cause a few headaches. So make sure you know, you might want to take a points hit or two. I wouldn't use your free hit necessarily because there isn't that many players that are going to be out. But obviously, I would wait to bring in someone like Mohamed Salah. He's obviously back. We want to see how his fitness is, see how that cup final goes, if he plays the whole time, if he has to play 120 minutes. I mean, everything. There's a lot of factors here. So I wouldn't bring in Mohamed Salah just yet, even though he just got a goal and an assist.
Who would you bring in?
Obviously, I've already talked about Hoyland, Alex. He's been banging in the goals, got a brace. You know, I told you guys to bring him in a couple weeks ago. I personally haven't brought him in yet, but, you know, if he just keeps scoring, then he's going to be a great, great asset. And United have a good run of games after the City game that they have. So they've got Fulham at home next, City away. Then they have Everton at home, great fixture. Sheffield at home, great fixture. Brentford away, Chelsea away. So a good four games there where he could, you know, just bang in the goals. You know, I would definitely look at Rasmus Højlund, 7.2 mil. If Lisandro Trossard keeps playing for Arsenal, it's another kind of cheap in for Arsenal. Leandro Trossard. Lisandro? Did I say Lisandro? Yeah. Leandro Trossard, he's 6.5 mil. He scored in three games in a row right now. So he's a midfielder, cheap option if you want a third Arsenal player. You know, he's one that I'm definitely looking at, especially if he starts getting more minutes and consistent starts. That's kind of one on my watch list. And then Kelleher, Alex. I mean, if Alisson's out for a significant amount of time, 3.7 mil for a Liverpool goalkeeper, he's definitely going to go up in price if he's, you know, keeps getting game time for Liverpool. So definitely would bring in someone like him for a really cheap option in goalie. But yeah, there isn't too many picks right now because of this blank game week. You know, I just think you need to make sure you set your lineups correctly, and if you need to take a points hit or two, I would do it now just so that, you know, you don't have two or three players just completely blanking and not playing. So set your lineups, guys.
Yeah, I just went to go check how long Alisson's out for, and they still don't even have like an idea of the return date. So that's usually not a good sign. You know, like they if it's like a small thing, they're usually like, oh, he'll be back in a week or two. So yeah, I was just wanted to make sure that it wasn't the case that Alisson was only out for a week or two, and it's looking that way. Another player we have to mention, just to end it here, that we forgot to mention who's going to be out injured, is Dominik Szoboszlai, who's been excellent, doing everything in midfield for Liverpool this season. So no Szoboszlai for the final, and for a few weeks after that, actually, saying the potential return date, possibly this weekend. So who knows? But Liverpool, welcome to our world. Welcome to Chelsea's world, where all of your favorite players are injured for long periods of time. It's hell. All right, on that note, let's end it there. Javier, thanks for being here with me on Monday night. If you want to follow Javier for more Fantasy Premier League tips and just Arsenal and Premier League thoughts in general, you can do so on Twitter, now known as X. at JavierRev9. You can follow me at ASMoss92 on Twitter and Instagram. And you can follow the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at GhostGoalPod. Enjoy more Champions League games this midweek and Premier League and Carabao Cup fixtures next weekend. And until next time, see you.